It's hardly taxing, Reed added on. Elijah, damn it. It was harder with him. He was so cold, so unfeeling, so analytical. She didn't feel like they were friends at all. Right. She focused on the path ahead of her. The urge to ask Elijah about his illegal power and why he refused to use it, popping back up into her throat no matter how many times she pushed it down. When the urge grew unbearable, she pulled out her phone and sent a quick group message. Isabel, I should know exactly what all your abilities are if they're going to suddenly appear inside me without warning. Both alphas pulled out their phones as Elijah pushed open the door to the fitness center, leading them toward Easton's usual room. He groaned quietly. Moses is going to jump on that. They entered the room, finding it empty. It was the first time she had ever arrived before everyone else. Elijah and Gabriel moved to dump their bags on the floor beside the door, and Isabel dropped her own belongings, tying up her hair just in case Easton made her exercise with the others. Theodore and Moses walked into the room, both of them adding their stuff to the now-growing pile.
You really want to know?
Moses asked out of nowhere, his dark eyes lit with some sort of challenge as he brushed past her, waving his phone in the air.
Yes?
She said to his back. Theodore tucked his phone back into his bag before dropping his arm over her shoulders and steering her to the stretching mat.
How are you feeling, pretty?
His lips delivered the question into her hair a second before he pressed her down to the mat, and then scooted a few inches away to start stretching. She arranged herself to copy his exercises, but before she could answer him, Moses was hovering by the edge of the mat.
For the record, I don't think anyone will appear inside you without warning, so you don't have to worry about their level of ability. Shut the fuck up, you idiot!
Theodore pounced forward, tackling Moses to the mat, the crash of their bodies narrowly missing her. She scooted closer to the wall, continuing her stretches with an annoyed look on her face to hide the embarrassment that wanted to flush over her cheeks instead.
You're an animal,
she grumbled as she bent over her outstretched legs and found herself face to face with Moses, Theodore holding his head tight against the mat. He laughed darkly, throwing Theodore off him and switching their positions.
That's what you should be able to do by now,
Nico stated dryly, standing at the edge of the mat and pointing to Moses. She glanced over his shoulder, noting that Killian, Kian, and Sato, Oscar, had also arrived.
Yeah, exactly.
She bit her lip as she looked up at Nico.
So why can't I?
They teased each other sometimes when they were wrestling, but he didn't usually react the way he was now, by falling silent, his nostrils flaring, his eyes tracing the way she stretched before darting off to the side.
I guess you had a good sleep,
he muttered, falling down beside her and pressing her back down again, forcing her deeper into the stretch.
No excuse to be lazy, though.
She huffed, trying to shrug him off.
This is Professor Easton's session, not yours.
He snorted.
This is Professor Easton's vocal session. He can keep your throat. I'm the one in charge of your body.
Nico!
Moses flopped off Theodore, his laughter sudden and deep.
You make it too easy!
Nico scowled.
I obviously didn't mean it like that.
Moses rolled to his side, that devilish eyebrow of his jumping up again as he leaned on his elbow, propping his chin into his hand.
Her spine is in the wrong position.
It is not,
Isabel snapped back.
Actually, it is,
Nico said.
Sit up.
He waited for her to obey before he shifted partially behind her, flattening his hand to her stomach, his other hand pressing just above her mid-back.
Straighten up,
he instructed, his breath brushing her neck.
You don't want that curve when you start to bend.
Nico never touched her like this. She tried to correct the position of her spine, but Nico made a dissatisfied sound, both of his hands dropping to her hips, fingers digging in just above her hip bones and pulling back. That strange, empty feeling that she had woken up with sparked back to life again, even more hollow and cavernous, an ice-cold itch creeping up through her organs.
Better,
Nico grunted.
Now keep that rotation in your hips. Keep your spine straight, and...
He pressed against her back, forcing her to bend over her legs again. He was right. Her spine had been in the wrong position. She was too distracted to even stretch properly.
There was a spark of satisfaction in Moses' gaze that reminded her of Oscar for an uncomfortable moment. A glint of sadistic enjoyment, as though he had just engineered a moment of chaos, a private unraveling of something just for his own private viewing.
Theodore gripped her thigh and dragged her halfway across the mat, refusing to look at the others as he went quietly back to his exercises. She returned to copying him, and Moses smirked like he had won.
I know when people are lying.
Nico was speaking to the mat, and several heads whipped up at his confession.
That's what my ability is.
He directed his attention to the door, ignoring everyone else.
What's keeping Mickey?
Isabel almost bit her tongue to hold back the barrage of questions. It wasn't polite to interrogate people about their abilities, but being able to tell when people were lying? That was powerful. It made her think about her own father and his claims that he didn't have an ability. So far, all the alphas she had met were in possession of very potent abilities. The ability to control time, to control the weather, to turn into murderous somethings, to read the future, to turn invisible, to create chaos, to control people. She still didn't know what Gabriel's ability was, but she was sure he had one, and she was sure it would be illegal. Suddenly, it didn't seem so feasible that her father was born without an ability.
He had a rough night,
Kian answered, only a second before Easton stepped into the room, slamming the door behind him.
You four,
he pointed to Moses, Theodore, Kian, and Elijah.
And Carter. On the treadmills, now.
He grunted the words, barely even sparing them a glance.
Oscar, Gabriel, and Killian, on the rowing machines. 15 minutes hard and fast, and then switch.
He clapped his hands together, making Isabel twitch an inch closer to Theodore.
Go!
Theodore pulled her up with him, giving her a carefree grin, reassuring her that Easton's sharp mood was nothing to be concerned about. But she accidentally looked up at Easton as she passed by him, catching sight of a new scar on his cheek, deep and pink, and mottled bruising around his neck peeking up from the top of his collar. She stumbled, her eyes stretching wide as his attention zeroed in on her, his eyelids lowering over mismatched pupils to make his gaze more severe as a hint of annoyance pinged against her chest from his direction.
Something you want to say, Carter?
His tone wasn't quite as sharp as when he had been addressing the group, but there was a deeply unhappy undercurrent that made her want to tuck her chin and run away.
No, Professor.
Treadmill!
Theodore stepped between her and Easton, quickly pushing her toward one of the machines.
Hurry now.
He waited until she was tapping the buttons to increase her speed, her neck prickling like Easton was still watching her, before Theodore leaned over from the treadmill beside hers.
Keep your head down this session, he whispered. If you need to leave, just leave. One of us will go with you.
She reared her head back, blinking at him in confusion.
Because of E?
She began to ask, but he just put a finger to his lips and hiked up the speed on his machine, kicking it into a sprint. He even pulled out headphones, but he flashed her a short, apologetic smile in the mirror as he tuned out the rest of the room. She found her attention drifting to the left, studying Easton in the mirror as he scrolled through his phone, snarling at the boys on the rowing machines for slacking off. He was definitely in a state, but she couldn't tell exactly what the state was, because every alpha in the room seemed to be feeling something negative, and it was hitting her from all directions. Wariness, frustration, exasperation, dread, distress. They were all worked up, but they were hiding it remarkably well.
On their faces, at least.
She fished her own headphones from the pocket of her shorts, choosing the latest playlist she had finalized for her practice sessions. With the aid of music, her body seemed to activate, suddenly willing and eager to move, the running belt moving too slow for the beat of the song she had chosen. She edged the speed past what she usually set it at, realizing she might have a chance of running off the anxious edges of everyone in the room if she tried hard enough. She lost herself in the music, in the process, slowly siphoning off hints of their jagged emotion until her heart skipped a beat and her legs almost failed her. A hand shot out, hitting the emergency stop button for her treadmill, and she jerked to the side, thrown off balance.
"You're done."
Elijah's voice was cold, catching her easily, his arm wrapped around her waist as he set her on the ground, holding her up as she tried to gain her footing. Her headphones had fallen out, her music echoing back up to her from where they lay on the ground.
"Carter."
"Easton. Shit."
"Good luck."
Elijah walked away, leaving her to raise her head and confront the scarred professor. He looked like he had been pacing before the stretching mat, where the rest of the alphas were lined up, half of them on their backs, the other half standing with medicine balls. Gabriel was propped up, watching her closely as Elijah returned to him and snatched up the medicine ball, sending it down with so much force that it might have cracked Gabriel's ribs if he hadn't caught it so deftly, tossing it back up lightly. The whole time, he stared at her, until Elijah muttered something to him and he returned his full attention to the task. When she still hadn't moved, Easton frowned, his finger twitching. He was pointing at the ground before him, but he hadn't raised his hand at all. It was almost like the movement was completely unconscious. She swallowed, shuffling over to him, her system in shock. She hadn't noticed the others getting off the treadmills or beginning their other exercises. She didn't even know how long she had been running for, but she could feel the heavy weight of everything she had gradually stolen from them. It sat inside her chest, swirling painfully, a dark vortex, hungry for more. Combined with that horrible, persisting emptiness in her gut that still plagued her, it was enough to make her limbs tremble as she stopped before Easton.
"Take over, Nico,"
Easton commanded, before striding to the far side of the gym, casting her a quick, loaded look like he expected her to follow. She trailed him to a smaller stretching area where the mats backed onto a mirrored section of the wall. The air conditioner was right above her, making the hairs along her arms stand on end as her sweat dried under the frigid breeze. He pulled a yoga mat from the wall and flicked it out, settling it over the ground.
"I can do whatever the others are doing," she insisted quietly,
just out of pure stubbornness. She obviously couldn't. There was strong, and then there was alpha strong. If Elijah threw a medicine ball at her with that much force, it wouldn't just break her ribs. It would break her, and then probably go through the floor beneath her.
Easton smirked, like he knew what she was thinking.
"On the mat, Carter. Floor work for you. I'm sorry you had to be here, but I'm sure you can make use of the time."
She shrugged, her attention snapping between him and the mat.
"Of course."
"Professor."
She blinked.
"Sorry, Professor."
Usually, Easton let it slip when she didn't call him Professor. Kaelin was the one who pulled her up on it every time, a hint of iron lining the soft reprimand.
Easton stared at her for a second, before sighing and sinking onto the seat of the nearest weights machine.
"Carter,"
he paused, his mouth tightening.
"Why are you looking at me like that?"
"Like what?"
she squeaked. His mismatched eyes narrowed. They were almost slits.
"Kian sent a message."
"Of course he did," she grumbled.
"Professor,"
he hissed. She snapped her mouth shut, and he pulled in a deep breath, inching back until his shoulder rested against the machine behind him. He looked almost lazy, but his attention was far too heavy. She waited for him to continue, and he waited for her to correct herself. Swallowing, she muttered, "Professor." For some reason, he laughed. The sound was short and sharp, and his head fell into his hands as his broad shoulders shook, and then he was straightening again.
"I know you borrowed Elijah's power," he said, shaking his head now. "You made Kian tell you what happened last night, didn't you?"
She quickly moved to the mat, seating herself so that she was facing the mirror instead of him, her legs crossed. "Sorry, Professor, I don't know what you're talking about." She stretched out her right arm, notching it outside her left knee, and twisted her spine that way. When she was finally, blessedly, turned fully away from him, her expression finally broke, her eyes growing wide and her lips twitching with the urge to mouth, "What the hell?" to someone. Except that the other alphas were all busy beating each other up. All of them except Killian. Since Nico had been his partner, he was mostly just moving between the other pairs, saying things she couldn't hear, his pale eyes regularly flicking back to monitor her and Easton.
"Help,"
she mouthed. An amused smirk cracked over his face, but it was just as quickly wiped away, and he shook his head.
"Isabel."
Her head whipped to the side, connecting with Easton's stare before she could control her reaction. She switched her stretch to the other side, pretending it had all been part of the plan.
"Tell me what you know," he said plainly.
"I don't really think you want me repeating it, Professor."
She tried to direct her attention to his chin so that she didn't break out into a nervous sweat, but she only found her attention snagging on the bruises rising out of his collar.
"I don't know where you got those marks," she added.
"Would you like to know?"
he asked, a little too casually. An alarm immediately blared to life inside her head, telling her that she was being invited into a trap, but she couldn't seem to help herself. She nodded. A small motion, easily overlooked.
"It's called the Stone Dahlia."
He dropped his voice until she had to lean forward to hear him.
"The clubhouse your secret admirer is texting you about."
He emphasized the word clubhouse as though it didn't even begin to describe it.
"But we're pretty sure it isn't one of the students. We think it's someone from the track team."
"The track team? As in the..."
"No."
He didn't even wait for her to properly voice the question.
"I mean the group of stupidly powerful old men who run this whole show."
He flicked his hand around, indicating the cameras stationed around the room.
"The billionaires who decide which students get put on the icon track. They run the Stone Dahlia, and we're going to make sure you give them what they want."
"First..." She quickly twisted to sit on her knees, facing him, gaping at him as she held up a finger.
"Why?"
"And second..." She imitated his hand flick at the cameras. "How do you know they aren't listening right now?" He tugged his phone from his pocket and waved it at her.
"Elijah and Gabriel have been developing a security app. If they try to turn the cameras on to spy on us during our private sessions, we'll all get a notification."
"Can I get that app?"
She chewed on her lip, watching as his expression relaxed slightly. Had he expected their conversation to go differently?
"Yes."
He leaned forward, his forearms planted on his thighs, his hands hanging down between his knees. They seemed to have a fresh slew of healing scars scattered over them.
"You did the right thing, telling Theo and Killian, Carter."
You can call me Isabel, if you want, Professor."
"You don't tell me what to call you. I decide that."
He flinched back, like he was reacting to his own sharp tone, his palms running over his thighs.
"Sorry," he grimaced. "It's been a night."
"I heard."
"About what?"
"About the girlfriend."
The
sound was a rumble in his chest.
"I don't have one of those."
"Well, you forgot about her pretty quick."
Easton chuckled.
"Don't be a brat, Isabel.
You can tease the other alphas all you like, but it won't get you anywhere with me. Know where you want to be, anyway.
She bit her tongue.
I've gone easy on you, because you hadn't been accepted into Dorm A yet. But you're as good as moved in now, which makes you my responsibility. I'm more than a dorm supervisor or a mentor to these boys. I'm here for everything they need. But most of the time, I'm also the one who decides what they need. Are you ready for that?
I'm not very good at being told what I need.
She quickly dropped her eyes to her knees, confused about when she had turned to face him so readily, like an eager fan straining to hear his every word. She relaxed her posture, stretching her legs out in front of her to ease the ache in her muscles. It wasn't from her run, but from the heaviness she had sipped out of each of them, and that hollow sting persisting beneath her skin.
Easton watched her. I've noticed.
I already have someone dictating what I need.
That's your first free pass, he informed her calmly. Compare me to Bron Carter again, and I'll show you how a real man disciplines.
She frowned, wriggling her toes. You're very threatening for a professor.
You're remarkably unafraid for a girl who was almost murdered a month ago.
She felt her lips tugging up at the sides. Was she enjoying talking to Easton? It felt like she was. I've had worse.
No, you haven't, he said softly. But you're one of mine now. Nothing like that will happen to you again.
A shudder traveled up her spine, making her vision hazy at that word. Mine. Her toes stopped wiggling, curling in shock before she curbed the reaction. She stumbled. Thank you, Professor.
His lips lifted at the corners.
You're welcome, Isabel.
She stared at him, struck dumb. I feel weird, she blurted. I feel like you just took away all my problems and made them all sound so simple. But they're not. Like, why would the track team be threatening me into trying to figure out a way to contact them? Why wouldn't they just talk to me? And if the officials know about your ability, which they do if they have the blackmail video, how are you still here?
Not all of the officials, Easton said. The track team is only a percentage of them, and they want to know damaging things about people. It's how they enslave them. If they can't find anything damaging on you and they want you on their side, they'll force you into doing something incriminating just to make sure you're properly under their heel before they take you on board.
And you want them to recruit me? She asked, a frown furrowing into her brow.
They need to know that what they have on you is enough.
His eyes grew dark, his emotion suddenly pressing heavily up against her, roiling and bitter.
If you resist, they'll try harder. If this is them, and we think it is, then they're going easy on you, which means they're desperate for you.
For me to... what? What do they do?
What don't they do?
He sucked in a breath through his teeth.
The Stone Dahlia is almost the same size as the Academy, tunneling so far down below us that they could host an entire concert down there and we would never suspect a thing up here.
Down? Down where?
She spluttered.
Beneath the main lake. The entrance is through the boathouse. Well, the gifted entrance, anyway. The human entrance is from the other side of the hill leading up to the Academy. They hire out rooms. Hire out gifted. They put us on display. Make us entertain crowds of humans who have paid obscene amounts for an invitation. The track team has information on everyone. Not just us, but their human guests and each other.
He was giving her so much information. So much insane information. But for some reason, she could only think of one thing in that moment. The back of Gabriel's door, and the message that had been spelled out with individual sticky notes, arranged so heartrendingly, obsessively. I am not for sale. She swallowed, tears springing up before she could stop them. Horrified, she looked back down to her lap. Does my father know about this?
Undoubtedly.
Easton's voice deepened.
It seems like a game of popularity, but it's the track team who actually decides the winner every year, and they continue to control their icons long after they leave the walls of Ironside.
She tapped a freckle on her thigh. I don't want to get involved with them.
You have no reason to trust me, but I've protected every one of my alphas since the day they arrived here, and I'll protect you, too. I'm asking you to trust me. Trust Kaelin. Trust Elijah. Trust your friends.
He cleared his throat.
Don't trust Oscar.
She picked her head up, surprised. You, Kaelin, and Elijah?
There are a lot of contingencies to plan in the situation we find ourselves in.
His grin almost twitched into being again.
Elijah is our planner. If he tells you to do something, you should do it. He usually has a good reason.
She chewed her lip. And Oscar?
Is damaged.
Easton's expression closed down.
And reactionary. Attuned to his instinct instead of his conscience. Before he had a mate, he was manageable. But you've just added a whole new level of primality to his brain that might make things a little difficult with you living in the dorm. You'll need to learn to manage him.
Why can't he learn to manage me instead? She grumbled. Easton smiled, his first full, real smile since they had begun talking, and even though it twisted all his scars and made the shadows beneath his eyes even darker, she felt something in her chest flip, the hollow ache inside her turning just that little bit more painful.
I'm afraid Oscar has a habit of breaking his toys,
Easton warned. Isabel groaned.
This again? I'm not a toy.
Easton's smile dropped away, and he leaned forward again.
You're a born and bred puppet, Carter. I'm not saying that to be cruel. I'm saying it because it's the truth. You're a toy to anyone who wants to play with you, whether you let them or not. Well, that's the part that's up to you. I'll protect you from the other gifted, from the psychotic bitch who hurt you, from your asshole of a father, and from the officials at Ironside. But you're going to need to protect yourself against the other alphas. Decide your boundaries. Make them clear. Learn how to manage the volatile personalities and find your space with the peaceful ones. Nobody else is going to do that for you. We have too much respect for each other to dictate how you interact with each of us. Those are our boundaries. Am I clear?
Crystal.
She chewed her lip, and his eyes flashed with amusement, as though he knew she had more to say. Eventually, she just blurted, Everyone calls you Mickey.
You'll have to earn that,
he said, standing, his eyes passing over her.
Floor exercises only for the rest of the session. I don't want to see you back on that treadmill, and if I catch you siphoning off anyone's shitty mood, you're in trouble. I think you've taken enough for today.
She swallowed, waiting for him to walk away, but he didn't. He waited. She ducked her chin, and he knelt before her.
Nod if you're going to obey, he said gently, sensing that she was completely overwhelmed.
She nodded, her gaze still stuck to her legs.
Good girl,
he said, low and soft, the words a caress that fluttered through her on a gentle breeze, lifting her chin as he stood and walked away so that she could watch him. She had no idea what kind of man Easton... His name was Mikkel. She had no idea what kind of man he was, but her chest ached with the need to trust him, to see what might happen if she became one of his alphas. Though she would never be one of them, she still wondered what it would be like to be one of his. Her entire life, people had claimed that they were protecting her, doing things for her own good. But none of them ever looked like Mikkel when they claimed it. None of them ever made her feel like it was true. Chapter 9. Adorable Sex on a Stick. Elijah and Gabriel both came to her practice session that afternoon, using the other half of the room to quietly do their own thing as she picked her song and did a few stretches, sneaking glances at them from beneath her eyelashes. They had said they wouldn't intrude on her session, but she was still uncomfortable enough to surreptitiously spy on them for a few minutes. They had paired both of their headphones with Gabriel's phone and seemed to be working out the choreography for a song she couldn't hear. It seemed complicated, too complicated for her to follow, until she realized it wasn't just a dance for one or two people. It was group choreography. She forced herself to tune them out, grabbing her phone and watching through the last recording she had made of her end-of-year piece for dance acrobatics. After identifying her problem areas, she restarted her music and cycled through the routine. Once, and then twice, and then three times. With each repetition, she only grew more frustrated. The moves were good, but they weren't great, and Professor Lai had announced that he would be grading their final performances over the last 2 days of class. He was restricting his third-year class to the top 10 performers, which made it incredibly competitive, especially when most of the other students were pairing up to better their chances. She wasn't sure if it was her slow recovery from the Vermont attack or not, but something was off with her dancing.
Need a hand?
Gabriel's quiet tone made her head whip up. She focused on the bench where he and Elijah had relocated to at some point without her noticing. She spun on her heel, approaching them, and hitting pause on her music. Is it that bad?
It's a little forced.
Elijah leaned up against the wall, his posture relaxed.
But you're still healing.
Gabriel shrugged, apparently agreeing with the other alpha. Forced how? She demanded, a little too quickly, before focusing on Elijah. And what are you doing for your final performance?
For Lai? He asked, cocking his head. I choreographed a dance, but I've run into casting issues.
Casting issues? She asked, as Gabriel snorted.
He doesn't want to dance with anyone, Gabriel supplied. But since Lai's third-year class is a partner class, he still prepared partner choreography.
Oh. She glanced between them, waiting for Elijah to get upset that Gabriel was teasing him. But Elijah remained relaxed, a small smile hooking at the edges of his mouth. I didn't realize. You barely come to class. I don't know how you get away with it.
I send Lai weekly recordings of my progress.
Elijah leaned forward an inch, a spark lighting up his gaze.
He seems content. Are you scoping me out, Sigma?
You are my competition, she sniffed, crossing her arms. I want to get into Lai's class next year, too.
Why?
Gabriel cocked a brow.
It's an acro duo class. Duo being the key word.
She widened her eyes at him in mock horror. Are you saying I don't have any friends? He smirked, but it wasn't cruel. It was weirdly intimate. And it was Gabriel, so that added a whole other layer of weird to the intimacy.
He's saying you're very selective about who gets close to you.
Elijah sounded almost bored.
Yep.
Gabriel's lips popped on the word.
And acro duo work is a whole lot of getting close.
Are you on the wait list? She asked, because it really sounded like he was, which was surprising. She couldn't picture Gabriel dripping in sweat with chalk-dusted hands tangled up with a dance partner. Gabriel crooked his finger at her instead of answering. She glanced at Elijah, but he only dropped his head to the side, his eyes sweeping over her, a challenging glint entering his expression. She stepped toward Gabriel, stopping between his knees.
"Come here,"
he muttered, tilting his chin up. She ducked down, assuming he didn't want his words overheard, her eyes flickering nervously between his. He was showing her that spark of personality again, that little hint of interest that he usually buried behind a wall of cool, calm, and collected.
"Closer, puppy."
She made a face at him. It probably looked scared. Elijah chuckled, and the sound urged her to quickly duck her face beside Gabriel's, his dark blonde hair brushing her nose. His scent was soothing and gentle, so subtle it made her want to press her nose to his skin and inhale. He was clean and crisp, like fresh linen hung out to dry in the sun. It was so comforting, it almost made her toes curl as she imagined slipping into a bed with fresh cotton sheets drifting against her skin.
"We're going to need to know all the classes you want to waitlist for next year."
"Why?" She drew back just enough to look at him in the eye again, but he nudged his head to the side, silently demanding she move closer again. When she tucked her head back beside his, this time, she felt his fingers on the back of her knee. The touch seemed experimental, just a light brush of his fingertips testing out the surface of her skin. She immediately got goosebumps, the hollow ache inside her growing just that little bit sharper.
"Because we need to make sure there's at least one of us in each of your classes," he whispered.
She started to draw back again, to demand why again. But this time, both his hands wrapped around the backs of her thighs, jerking her forward until her chest slapped against his, her thighs pressing between his. She could even feel the hard brush of muscle against her stomach through their clothes. His scent was something she could have easily gulped up just for the rush of comfort it gave her. But his touch had the opposite effect, making her so nervous she almost felt sick.
"Because," he muttered,
answering the why she hadn't had a chance to ask.
"Bad things happen when we leave you alone."
"Welcome to the world," she whispered back, feeling Elijah's silent attention on the side of her face. "Bad things happen. You can't stop them."
"Dance with Elijah."
"No,"
she said reflexively. "Why not?"
He sounded amused. Because. She drew back again, and this time he let her. She flicked a look to Elijah, but his expression was blank and relaxed. Still. It was actually mildly infuriating at this point. She wanted to see him ruffled.
"Because?"
Gabriel prompted. "I don't know." She disentangled herself and quickly restarted her playlist, running through her routine a few more times before finally giving up. It was getting worse. She wasn't as fluid as she had been before the settlement tour, and her stamina wasn't the same. After working in the library for the rest of the day with Gabriel and Elijah, she trailed them to the dining hall for dinner, still preoccupied with the task of choosing her classes for the next year. Her father had already emailed her to advise on which classes she should take, and to inform her that they would be deciding her class list on Monday night after he returned to Ironside. It was an improvement on him deciding everything and her finding out what she was in store for without even a conversation, but she wasn't sure she liked the fact that there was progress. He was trying to loop her in because he thought she was playing the game and was proud of the cunning he thought he had perceived in her. But she was only trying to survive, just like she had every day in that penthouse apartment with her mother. The only difference was that her father wasn't the only monster under her bed anymore.
"That's our booth."
Elijah pointed to the alcove she usually saw the alphas in.
"Meet us there after you have your food."
She watched them walk off with a bemused expression. They knew booths weren't reserved, right? They had to. But still, now that she thought about it, nobody else dared to approach that particular table. Must be nice to be untouchable. She grabbed a tray and stopped before the food bar. It was Japanese-themed, with an extensive noodle and ramen section, a colorful sushi section, and a section for meats and tempura, which she passed by without a glance. She picked up a bowl of rice, a smaller bowl of vegetables, and some noodles in a miso broth, the steam curling up from the food making her stomach clench. She hadn't had much of an appetite lately, so it took her a few moments to realize she was hungry. She also hadn't had to pause any of her activity to have a sneezing or coughing fit, and her head was clear of the fuzzy, disorientated feeling that had been plaguing her for weeks. With a frown, she pulled out her phone and quickly navigated to the group chat, not really looking where she was going. "Isabel, what did you guys do to me last night?"
"You're running out of time."
She pulled up short, her attention snapping up past her tray as someone grabbed the other side of it. Crow was glowering down at her, looking like he wanted to flip her tray up into her face. After a moment, he forcibly released it, spilling miso soup across the surface. "What?" she managed, catching sight of Eve hovering a few tables away, pretending to talk to her friends, her gaze fixed sharply on Isabel and Crow.
"You're running out of time."
He enunciated each of the words like she was hard of hearing.
"It's almost summer break."
Her mind went blank, her lips parting in shock. "It was you." He didn't answer. "The messages?" she pressed, an unfamiliar spark of fury igniting somewhere inside her. "You took that video." He still didn't answer, but his complete lack of shock or confusion seemed to speak volumes.
"Did you hear me, slut?"
He leaned over the tray, smelling like sweat and fear.
"You're out of fucking time. Do you have an answer or not?"
No, he didn't smell like fear. He felt like fear. It was so strong. It reached out to her even though he wasn't an alpha, and her walls were still solidly raised. He was swimming in it. "I do," she said simply. The look of hatred in his eyes burned hotter.
"What's it called, then?"
"The Stone Dahlia."
"And how do you get in, Sigma?"
"You enter through the old boathouse by the lake."
"Then why haven't you?"
He turned his head, spitting on the ground.
"They'll be making their offer to you tomorrow morning. It's just a formality. You can't actually refuse."
He stalked off, and she glanced over at Eve, but the other girl was now pretending not to have noticed the interaction at all, laughing easily with her hand on the arm of an Omega girl. Isabel narrowed her eyes, noticing again that Eve seemed to have lost weight, her usual clothes hanging off her frame, the dark circles beneath her eyes unceasing.
"Not Isabel's problem."
She hurried over to the Alpha booth, slipping onto the edge of the bench seat without looking to see who else was there, except Gabriel, who sat opposite her and had been half-raised from his seat like he was about to come after her. He eased back down when she did, and she felt his attention on her. Not just him. She smelled salt water and sunshine and heady whiskey nearby. Kian and Nico. Still, she didn't tear her attention from Crow, zeroing in on his table. He sat alone, staring down at an untouched tray, a vacant look on his face. Bellamy sat separately, surrounded by his usual group of loyal supporters. Crow's hair had grown longer and now hung shaggy and choppy, the unwashed length dangling over his eyes. He had put on weight, and his skin was sunken and sallow. Whenever someone passed by too close to where he sat, his eyes darted about in a panicked sort of way, before resolutely fixing back to his tray. He looked terrible, defeated, afraid, traumatized.
It was him?
Elijah's soft whisper broke into her thoughts.
The behemoth?
She nodded, barely, aware they couldn't discuss anything openly.
What did you guys...
She cleared her throat, glancing up to do a quick inventory of who was sitting in the booth. Elijah, Gabriel, Kian, and Nico.
I mean, did any of you do something to him?
That's not us, doll.
Kian nodded toward Crow.
That's someone else's doing.
He dipped close, his breath brushing her ear as he whispered,
several someones.
Are you sure?
She pressed, biting on the inside of her cheek to keep from blurting out accusations, mostly directed toward Theodore or Oscar. Kian slapped a napkin onto her tray to soak up the spilled liquid.
Mostly sure. I think you got a message.
She pulled out her phone with a frown. Theodore.
You've forgotten?
Killian.
What do you remember?
Oscar.
Bad things.
Moses.
Filthy things.
Theodore.
Moses, what the actual fuck?
She shook her head, typing out a reply. Isabel. I know you weren't there, Moses. You smell like stomped on flowers. It's hard to miss.
Moses. You can scent us? Little wolf.
Nico laughed out loud, reading his phone like it was a novel he was particularly invested in while he shoveled food into his mouth with the other hand. Killian.
What do you remember, baby?
Kian groaned next to her, muttering,
This fucking guy.
Isabel. I remember taking a shower.
Suitably vague,
Elijah mumbled. They were all on their phones, preferring to have this conversation away from the prying ears of Ironside.
Yeah, we might need specifics, Carter.
Nico seemed to be enjoying himself. She scowled, quickly tapping out another message. Isabel, I remember taking a shower with Killian and Theo. Killian,
you fell asleep.
Isabel, in the shower? Theodore,
on me.
Isabel,
in the shower?
Kian snorted. Theodore,
a few steps out of the shower. Don't apologize.
Theodore's shadow fell across her, his eyes glancing at the screen of her phone, where she had begun to do exactly that. She quickly scooted over on the bench, accidentally bumping into Kian. He slid all the way to the back of the booth, pulling her with him, and then he dragged their trays over. The rest of the alphas filtered in, some of them bringing extra food for Nico, who must have been texting them his orders. Killian slid a plate of sushi down the table to Nico and then sat, announcing,
We asked the officials to put a couch in my room big enough for me to sleep on.
He let his voice carry naturally, probably wanting the cameras to pick up on this particular conversation.
They should be done by the time we finish dinner. You didn't run into any issues?
Elijah asked. Killian shook his head, gulping down half a glass of water before he pulled his tray closer.
Some of us are acting as Isabel's surrogates. That means keeping her safe. They must have expected us to do something when they brought Eve... Don't say her name,
Oscar snarled. He had been sitting quietly with Moses on the other side of the booth, acting disinterested in the lively conversation between Theodore, Kian, and Nico. But now, his head was lifted from his food, his dark eyes furious.
When they brought the Omega back.
Killian smoothly corrected, instead of acting like Oscar was being ridiculous.
Anyway, you can sleep in my bed, and I'll sleep on the couch.
Killian glanced up at her, his expression crafted into a polite, friendly arrangement of his angelic features.
You already have enough popularity points for a spot in Dorme, right?
Isabel nodded. My father said the Matefinder campaign took care of that. Her father had actually said the Vermont attack had taken care of it, but if she repeated those exact words, she might actually vomit before she reached the end of the sentence.
Good.
Killian lifted a shoulder in a shrug, his muscles shifting beneath his shirt. A shirt that looked pretty good, actually. She might have to hunt it out of his closet later.
Then we're agreed, right? You'll stay with me until they give you your own room. You've more than earned it.
Her phone vibrated before she could answer, and she checked her messages. Unknown.
Hey.
Unknown.
It's Sophia.
She blinked at her screen in surprise. Kian and Theodore both drifted closer, peering down into her lap, giving her no privacy.
The girl from the hospital?
Theodore muttered lowly, sounding confused.
Unknown. I got your number from Mama's records.
She saved the number and was about to reply when Kian caught her hand, stopping her.
Let's see what she has to say,
he murmured against the top of her head.
Who?
Gabriel asked from across the table.
Tell you later,
Theodore said, watching as the typing dots popped up on her screen again. Sophia,
I need your help.
Sophia,
it's urgent.
Sophia,
I feel like such a dick, but nobody else will listen to me. I need you.
Sophia,
full disclosure, when I say you, I mean your alphas.
Isabel's grip tightened, a chill creeping up her spine. Beside her, Kian let out a low whistle.
That was fucking ballsy.
Sophia,
please. Finish your food.
Theodore closed his hand around her phone, forcing it face down on her lap. She had completely lost her appetite, her stomach clenching sickeningly as she stared at her tray. She forced her jaw to unclench, her fingers to snap around her chopsticks, but she was shaking too much, her breath sounding too loud in her ears. She wasn't even sure why she was overreacting so much.
I'm going.
She dropped her chopsticks, waiting for Theodore to make room for her. He didn't, but he sighed, staring at his tray.
Of course you are. And I'll go with you, but you need to eat something first. If you lose any more weight, I'm going to drag you onto my lap during mealtimes and hand-feed you myself. Is that really something you want?
Objectively, it wasn't. Her mind knew that she wouldn't want the entire academy to see that, let alone everyone else in the world. But her body thought it sounded like a wonderful idea. Theodore's firm thighs beneath hers, his muscular arm wrapped around her, gripped tight, while he teased the seam of her lips with salty snacks and sugary treats. Her stomach swooped low, that hollow ache turning sharp with enough pain to make her wince. Theodore turned to her slowly, his nostrils flaring.
Oh.
His eyes dipped over her face.
You would.
Don't be ridiculous,
she growled out.
It's natural.
Elijah surveyed her from across the table, caressing the edge of his bowl of rice with his chopsticks.
Soul infractions remind the body and mind that it should have perished in the death phase. You're reaching out for your mate to remind you that there are reasons to remain in this world. Pleasures. Comforts. Like food. Unfortunately, your mate isn't here, so you're looking to us instead. I implore you to make use of your surrogates. Killian, Kian, and Oscar are all well aware of what they volunteered for.
He seemed to leave out Theodore and Gabriel on purpose, probably because of their girlfriends. She made a sound of frustration at him, wanting to kick him for vocalizing all of that before the cameras, but then she realized it was probably a ploy of some kind to clear up the rumors circulating online that all of the alphas were surrogating for her.
Kian,
she huffed, refusing to look at the tall alpha beside her, his skin warm as his arm brushed against hers.
Are you busy later?
How much later?
He returned, his voice carrying that husky quality that he usually reserved for flirting with everyone on camera. He didn't seem to give a single shit about his reputation.
5 minutes?
She shoved some of her food into her mouth, eating as quickly as she could.
For what?
Kian was leaning on the table now, bending down to peer at her. his eyes crinkling in amusement as her cheeks grew puffy with the amount of food she was trying to push through her lips. She swallowed.
I want to go to the chapel.
He nodded sagely.
You should definitely atone before you use me to ease your bond.
I'm not going to do anything to you.
She rolled her eyes, quickly filling her mouth again in the hopes that he dropped it. He didn't.
Should I use you, then?
There was a hard thump under the table, and Kian let out a low, deep chuckle.
Fine, fine. Let's go confess, Carter.
Thanks.
She managed around the rim of her soup bowl, having lifted it to hide the blush spreading across her cheeks. She tried to set her chopsticks down several times, but each time Theodore only shook his head, nodding to the unfinished food on her tray. After the third time, he ducked his head down beside hers, whispering in her ear.
I'll let you go if you agree to watch a movie with me before you go to sleep tonight.
She glanced at him, sucking in a short breath at how close his face was, before quickly turning away again.
Why?
She muttered.
Dessert,
he answered.
Fuck's sake.
Oscar stood up suddenly, jostling his tray.
Let me out.
He paused when he was out of the booth, glancing back to her and Theodore.
Group movie night,
he said stiffly.
In the common room. Offer still stands,
Theodore whispered. She dipped her head in a slight nod, and he stood up, tugging her out of the booth.
Ready?
He asked Kian. The other alpha nodded, following them out of the hall and around the lake.
Isabel was about to branch off and head to the residence on the other side of the chapel when Kian caught her arm, encouraging her into the chapel instead.
There's another exit through here,
he said, leading the way to a door mostly hidden along the back wall, behind the altar. He tried the handle, showing that it was unlocked, and opened it wide to reveal the outside wall of the guardian's residence.
How did you know that was there?
She asked.
I come to the chapel sometimes.
For some reason, his eyes dipped to her chest. To the chain hidden beneath her shirt?
You follow the gifted religion?
She guessed. He only shrugged, nodding at the open doorway. She skipped past, Theodore following wordlessly, and the three of them skirted the wall, finding themselves at the propped open gate. She approached the front door, knocking softly, but it was also ajar, and it squeaked, falling open further as her knuckles connected with it. A soft, strangled sob carried out to where they stood, and she almost darted forward, but Kian caught her shoulder, holding her back. Theodore pushed the door open the rest of the way, striding into the small kitchen.
What happened?
He sounded alarmed.
Is anyone else here? Is he okay?
It's just us.
Sophia sounded strained.
Isabel shrugged out of Kian's hold and pushed into the room, finding Sophia and Luis on the floor, leaning against the kitchen cabinets.
Luis was curled into a ball, his arms wrapped around his legs, his sobs small and terrified.
Carter!
Sophia looked up at her, tension and relief fighting across her expression.
You came.
What happened?
Isabel tried to step forward, but Kian caught her again, his hands at her hips this time. She glanced over her shoulder, catching his apologetic look before he tugged her back, pressing her hard against his body. With a short sigh, she realized neither of the alphas were going to let her near any strangers anytime soon.
He has dreams,
Sophia explained, as Theodore knelt on Luis's other side.
You okay, little buddy?
He set a hand against Luis's shoulder, completely dwarfing the small boy.
What kind of dreams?
Kian and Isabel asked at the same time, the same note of wariness in both their voices. Luis lifted his head, looking at Theodore, and then Kian, his eyes wide. When he glanced at Isabel, he paused, his glasses slipping off the edge of his nose, hanging precariously by his left ear, his face soaked in tears.
We're going to die,
he whimpered. Kian cursed, releasing Isabel. They both fell to their knees before Luis, who kept staring at Isabel like he thought she could somehow save him.
The gods like you,
he stuttered out, pointing to where her chain was hidden.
You can ask them for help.
Sophia pressed her hands over Luis's ears, her attention passing between Isabel and the alphas.
He said he heard sirens, screaming, alarms going off, and he said he saw me and Mama dead in the chapel.
She released Luis, popping up to fill a glass with water before returning and pressing it into his hands.
Hi.
Kian held out his hand after Luis pushed the glass away.
I'm Ashford.
I know.
Luis quickly tried to right his glasses, his hand trembling violently as it disappeared in Kian's grip.
I'm Luis.
How often do you have dreams that come true, Luis?
Kian reached over and straightened his glasses. Luis made a squeaking sound, like he suddenly couldn't talk.
Maybe once or twice a year, Sophia answered for him. They're never good, but they always come true. That's his first mistake.
Kian painted on a reassuring smile.
The divination ability is never certain. Unpracticed users will make their own predictions come true simply by believing they will.
Luis's watery, mahogany stare was growing wider by the second.
How far apart are the dreams from the incidents that occur?
Kian asked Sophia.
Sometimes a month, sometimes the next day.
She slipped her hands beneath Luis's arms.
Come on, Grasshopper. Let's go lie down, okay?
They all stood, watching as his eyes grew unfocused, his stance wobbly as Sophia pulled him to his feet.
He's about to crash hard, Sophia explained. If you have any other questions for him, you have a few minutes until he passes out.
I'll take him.
Kian bent down, banding an arm around Luis's legs and pulling him up to his wide chest. The little boy's head immediately lolled onto Kian's shoulder, his eyes fluttering shut.
Bedroom?
Kian asked. Sophia gave him directions before motioning the kitchen table.
Please, sit. I'll make tea.
Her accent deepened with a wobble, her eyes filling with tears now that Luis was out of sight. Isabel caught her shoulder and steered her to one of the chairs.
You sit,
she instructed the other girl gently. I'll make the